Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing Button That channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your voicemails, your text messages. Any thoughts on the playoffs, this Bulls season in general, the lottery coming up? Just less than a month away from that. So anything you guys want to talk about heading into this offseason or the playoffs, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Drop your texts and your voicemails there. Matt, happy Monday to you. Hopefully you enjoyed the NBA playoffs this weekend. Pretty exciting storylines coming out of the NBA playoffs. But for anybody that missed our conversation from Friday, we had Mark Schanowski, who was fantastic on our podcast for the first time ever. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that over this weekend, definitely go back and listen to there, because he spent 45 minutes with us and a phenomenal conversation with him. Matt, any takeaways from just the last couple of days thinking about our interview with Mark Schanowski and anything that he said, and how was your weekend?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Happy Monday. Weekend was great. Enjoyed some beautiful weather yesterday. Had our first rooftop hangout sesh at our place here in Logan, which was just absolutely glorious. Actually brought the TV up to the roof, watched the Cubs game outside with a bunch of beers and an ice bucket. It was just absolutely fantastic. And it capped it off with another Game of Thrones episode. Huge cliffhanger. Super annoying. We all knew it was going to be a cliffhanger episode, all you Thrones watchers out there. Next week's is really the big deal. The Battle of Winterfell. Can't wait. Back to our conversation with Mark from last Friday's episode. And like Jordan said, definitely check that out if you haven't already. Really fun. We covered a lot of bases. I gotta say, though, my biggest takeaway is that he's more open to the Derek idea than I thought he was. And I'm surprised that he went out on a limb and said that he wouldn't be opposed to that idea on our podcast.
Honestly, and this follows up from it, the most interesting thing I took away from it was he really thinks that the Bulls are going to take a point guard no matter where they are at.
Yeah.
So whether that's two, whether that's four, whether that's all the way back to seven,
right,
he really believes that the point guard position is something that the Bulls are going to target regardless of best player available. So I thought that was very interesting, considering all the wings that are going to be available at the top of the lottery. But that's, to me, that makes a lot of sense between Ja Morant, Darius Garland, and even Kobe White. If the Bulls fall to seven or eight, let's cross our fingers that doesn't happen.
And if they are, and not that necessarily Mark used this as one of his reasons for it, but and it was more so about their desperate need for a point guard, and that there are some in this first round, but that maybe they are really confident in their depth at wing now, having added Otto Porter Jr., of course, who projects to be in this team's starting lineup moving forward, depending on what happens in free agency in the draft, but also getting a healthy Chandler Hutchison back and maybe a healthy Denzel Valentine back. The Bulls can look at those three guys and say, okay, we have enough at the wing position and we really need a point guard. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to see them reach for one. If Ja Morant is off the board, the Bulls aren't in the top two. Is Darius Garland or is Kobe White worth a pick at somewhere three through eight? I'm not in love with that idea, but it certainly seems like Mark thinks that the point guard position is in such a mode of desperation right now that the Bulls might have no choice but to overreach on a guy like that.
Like you said, I don't want to see them reach either, and I think that weird spot you get to is if the Bulls get the third or the fourth pick in this draft, then you're like, okay, you're a little bit, you're like stuck in the middle. It's a little bit too high to take maybe a reach on Darius Garland, and Ja Morant's not there, and it's certainly, I think, in my opinion, it's a little bit too far of a reach to take Coby White there. So maybe the Bulls even look to move down a couple spots, and maybe they can add an asset or two and still get their guy at point guard. So.
As opposed to unenthusiastically taking, you know, whoever, like Barrett or Jared Culver or DeAndre Hunter or a guy like that. If the Bulls aren't in love with any of those guys, you know, by all means, if you can orchestrate a draft night trade and get yourself an asset while all trading down and then maybe taking a point guard after having moved down later in the draft that you still like enough to take a flyer on, you know, I'd be okay with the Bulls going that route.
So if you didn't catch our conversation there, go to your feed, your podcast feed, go to Friday's episode, 45 plus minutes with Mark Schanowski, and he was fantastic. And we even got into the dynasty and the post-dynasty era and what he remembers from that time. So that was interesting, too, to hear his perspective on covering the Bulls and just being in Chicago after the six championships and the disaster that followed after that. And just comparing that to this rebuild, I thought was his thoughts on that were really interesting. But Matt, we wanted today, on today's episode, we asked you guys to fill out a survey a few weeks ago. 10 questions about what you felt about this Bulls season. A few mixed in there, too, about the future of this Bulls team, maybe this summer and even beyond that. So we want to go through the first five questions. I picked out five questions for us to go through today. We'll go through the other five questions later this week. So I'm excited. Thank you to everybody who took the time to fill out the survey. We had 550 people vote on this. Some people skipped some questions, which is cool, but still, 550 votes. I know the sample size isn't that big, but it's big enough for us to at least have a conversation about maybe a fraction of the fan base and what their thoughts are. So, Matt, I'm excited, and I was actually, you know, I had some eyebrows raised at some of the responses to this, and I guess my thoughts on what Bulls fans felt and where they were at after this season were actually a little bit different than the results had said. So with that, let's start with the first question. So the first question we asked people here is, who's your Bulls MVP? And I gave you three responses: Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Robin Lopez. Matt, were you shocked at all to see the vote breakdown here between the Bulls MVPs?
No, I mean, I think Zach LaVine getting nearly 85% of the vote and Markkanen a distant second place with just under 10% of the vote makes sense. I think if you pulled, you know, at the beginning of the season, who do we want our MVP of the Bulls to be? Maybe there would have been a higher percentage in favor of Lauri Markkanen, and myself included, because I do think, you know, I'm still on the bandwagon of Markkanen having a higher overall ceiling than Zach LaVine, and you know, noting that he is a couple of years younger than Zach at this point. But when you just look at the numbers and you look at the overall body of work that those two guys had this season, it's not really much of a debate. Zach was this team's leading scorer. He improved his stats from last year in a lot of areas. But, I mean, having played more games than Lowry because of that injury that crushed the first month and a half of Lowry's season, to me, Zach LaVine is the correct answer. And I think most of our listeners who took this poll agreed with that.
Yeah, and if you think about it too, Zach LaVine too was battling through injuries all season, but he managed to stay on the floor for 80% of the season. And then obviously when they went and shut down people in March, that's where kind of his games dropped off, but still he played 63 games. Robin Lopez, Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono are the only three other guys who played in more games, 73, 74, and 81 respectively. But like you said too, you think about the craziness of this season, the dysfunction that happened early on, and Zach was really the only offensive firepower that this Bulls team had for, what, the first 2.5 months? I mean, here and there you would get nights from guys like Jabari Parker, you would get nights here and there from a few other guys, but more times than not, it was all focused on Zach LaVine. So, like I like to say is, you can't fix and you can't expect everything to happen in one season as far as improvement goes. And at least for me, watching Zach LaVine all season long, we saw a little bit of a step up in his offensive game and what he can do with the ball scoring, but also what he can do in a snapshot of facilitating too. So, you know, the defense, hopefully that comes next year in terms of improvement, but I think it's clear cut. Zach LaVine getting 84.5% of the vote, Lauri Markkanen get 9.6% of the vote, and then Robin Lopez with 5.4% of the vote. So I think that's fair. Bulls MVP going to Zach LaVine from the fans.
Yeah, and as you kind of just touched on there, not with LaVine, only his ability to score and leading this team, averaging 23.7 points per game, but the fact that we saw a bit more of his distributing abilities this season. You know, his assist to turnover ratio was still not great, especially in those months of the season when he was asked to be the guy, when Chris Dunn was on the shelf. But I mean, he averaged 4.5 assists, easily his career high, and that was not all that much more than Chris Dunn averaging just 6 assists per game, and in only 44 games played, as you said, compared to Zach LaVine 62 or 63 rather. So to me, you know, I don't know where we'll go from here and who the MVP of this team will be next season, and maybe we'll get a shift in power. But this season, I mean, in a lot of turmoil and a lot of ups and downs and a lot of inconsistencies as far as who was healthy, who was playing, what this roster had on it, LaVine was the biggest consistency by far.
Look at the month of November. That was the killer for Zach LaVine. His usage was at 31%, 31.9%. He averaged 22.9 points, 5.4 rebounds, and 5.5 assists. But the true shooting percentage, the effective field goal percentage was clearly down. He shot 25% from three in the month of November. That was the worst he had shot all season. The next lowest was 35.7% in that awful stretch in January where the Bulls lost 10 games. So you remove those 14 games from November, and I know 14 games is a lot, but you remove that from his season. I mean, he had a really damn good season if you include March, February, January, December, and October. That month of November, though, really killed him, and I think that's where we kind of saw the Bulls go off the rails there, and then you see the front office making decisions and changes, and the frustration kind of boils up there when you're the only guy night in and night out being able to score. So, yeah, you remove that month of November, and Zach had an even better season than I think people realize.
All right, so the next question on our survey list, Bulls Defensive Player of the Year. Well over 500 votes on this question as well, Jordan. The Rook, Wendell Carter Jr., getting 37.48% of the vote. Shaq Harrison, just a couple votes shy of Wendell, with 37.29% of the vote. Archie Diacono, third place with 13% of the vote. Robin Lopez, fourth place with just over 11% of the vote. A couple of write-in votes for Chris Dunn. And perhaps my favorite part of any of these questions in the first half of our survey that we're talking about today, the answer for Defensive Player of the Year, there was a write-in answer of nobody.
Classic. I mean, I can't argue with that write-in. If you're going to ask...
This was a bad defensive team this year.
Yes, yes. And if it wasn't for the Cavs and their historically bad defensive team this season, we would be talking about the Bulls in the same light, too. And isn't it ironic that Jim Boylan was supposed to be a defensive-minded coach, and we saw it a little bit in December, but then in terms of individual players, you're like, all right, how can you kind of weigh this out? And for Wendell Carter Jr., he only played in 44 games, but he had a huge impact. You think about all the players missing, too, while Wendell Carter Jr. was playing. You know, similar to Zach LaVine and having to carry the offensive weight for the team, I felt like Wendell Carter Jr. had to carry the defensive side of the weight, especially early on in that season. And Matt, we talked about it all the time at the beginning of the season, is Carter's biggest problem was he was getting into so much foul trouble, and it was hard for him to stay on the floor at times. And I think that came in part with the guys that he was playing and around him, and he was having to take fouls for guys. And, you know, easy buckets that were happening, Carter felt like he was the only one back on defense. He was drawing unnecessary fouls, especially early on in games. But I don't really have much argument. I mean, Shaq Harrison only got beat out by a couple of votes, and man, If it was up to me, maybe I would pick him just because he played all season long, and his defense got better and better as the season went on. So I don't have any arguments here. Maybe I would just say, personally, Defensive Player of the Year, I would give it to Shaq Harrison.
Yeah.
Because we saw him for the majority of the season as opposed to Carter's half season.
Yeah, we saw more of Shaq Harrison, and it wasn't just consistency. Like, you know, obviously, when Wendell was playing, other than battling foul trouble, which guess what, rookies tend to do in this league, he did show us his ability to be a shot blocker, rim protector, and also a guy who, even at his young, tender age, and his first year in the league, showed some of that ability to handle switches and to step out and guard guys around the perimeter and guard guys who are significantly smaller and quicker than he is. So there was plenty to like about what we saw from Wendell and his defensive abilities this season, but Shaq Harrison in his own right, and it goes into the conversation that you and I have kind of started to have, Jordan, which is, you know, if you can only keep one of the guys of, you know, Shaq, Archie, and maybe throw Wayne Selden into that conversation as the fringe guys that kind of cropped up this year, I lean towards Shaq because he's that good defensively. And you go back and look at some of the other defensive stats and metrics that we found out about Shaq Harrison this season. The fact that as far as deflections per minute and steals per minute, average speed on the defensive end, miles covered on the defensive end, like, this dude was in top five, top 10 categories in a lot of different defensive stats across the entire NBA. And qualified in a lot of these places because he did have that big and that consistent of a season. So I probably, as much as I liked what we saw from Wendell and believe that if you're talking about who has a higher potential and a higher ceiling as far as defensive star caliber players in the league, I would give that nod to Wendell. But this season, the Bulls Defensive Player of the Year, Shaq Harrison gets my vote easily.
Agreed. And you talk about the deflections per 36 minutes. At the end of the regular season, Shaq Harrison and Chris Dunn were tied for fifth best per 36 minutes with 3.7 deflections per 36. So, I mean, there's a handful of other guys that were tied at 3.7. You look at guys like potential Defensive Player of the Year, Paul George had 3.7 per 36. Draymond Green did. Marcus Smart. So we're talking about some pretty decent defensive players that Chris Dunn and Shaq Harrison were involved with. And two, we talked about other things too with Shaq Harrison as being like one of the fastest players in the NBA on the defensive side of the ball too. It's incredible what he was able to do after thinking back to the beginning of the season. He was cut from the Suns and the Bulls picked him up. And then he ended up turning out to be one of the best defensive players on this Bulls team all season long. So props to Shaq Harrison, man. I don't know if he's going to stay with the Bulls, but I think now over the last couple of weeks, Matt, I've started to convince myself that not only do I think maybe he'll stay here, but I think it's a good idea. I really like Shaq Harrison's game and whatever improvements, and he seems like he's just a boiling guy. I've said that from the beginning. So I would not be surprised at all if the Bulls said, You know what, we're gonna stick with Shaq Harrison. We're going to keep him around. And he can play multiple positions, too. We saw it this year. Not that I want him to play the three, but
right. In
spots, he can switch from the one to the two. So
yeah, I think he does, in a pinch, have a bit more versatility on the defensive end than Archie has. He's got a bit more length, and he can cover more ground. So, you know, I think, you know, that gives him a little bit of a nod. They're both offensively limited players. It would be really nice if Shaq Harrison learned how to shoot threes this summer, if the Bulls decide to bring him back. I'm not counting on it, but with everything he did for this team, as defensively challenged as they were, if somebody was making a big play on the defensive end this year, 7 times out of 10, it was Shaq Harrison. And not to discredit Archie, you know, nobody since Kirk has taken a charge in a Bulls uniform like Archie, and you got to love that guy. I think, you know, he and Shaq both have that Jim Boylan kind of, whatever you want to call it, soul, spirit, toughness, grit. But yeah, my vote for defensive POI goes to Shaq Harrison.
Agreed. I have to agree with you. Last thing I should say is Shaq Harrison was second in the entire NBA in loose balls recovered per 36 minutes at 2 per game. Sam Decker was actually the only one that was higher than he was. And this qualifies for guys that played at least half the season, 41 games. but second in the NBA there, and he was second behind, again, Sam Dekker for defensive loose balls recovered per 36 minutes at 1.5 per game. So, dude's a scrapper, man. I agree.
No,
given props to Shaq Harrison.
Interesting. No write-in votes for Justin Holiday. As much as we heard about Jim Boylan talking Justin Holiday's departure when the team was really struggling on the defensive end. Oh, you know, one of our team's best defensive players. You go back and look, Holiday did have a 0.8 positive defensive box plus minus in his 38 games with the Bulls this season, which was above his career average of 0.0. But still, to suggest, I think at the time people laughed and scoffed even at Boylan saying that, well, part of their defensive struggles were due to the departure of Justin Holiday. Not a single vote for Holiday, because I think mostly at this point Bulls fans forgot that he was on this team this year, and rightfully
yeah,
so.
Yeah, even John Paxson too had mentioned that at his postseason press conference too, said that, like, we lost one of our better defensive players in Justin Holiday, and I'm like, that's the second time we've heard that in the last 4 months. One from Boylan, one from Paxson. But Justin Holiday did play some pretty decent perimeter defense. Everything else was below average, but I will give him credit for at least playing a little bit better defensive or perimeter defense than any of the rest of the guys too. And he had a tall task too when he was here. I mean, he was asked to guard the best player on the floor pretty much every night. So there was times where he was getting torched, but you didn't really have a choice considering Carter was your best defensive option there, and he can't guard guys like Kawhi or Kevin Durant or any of those wings. So he did have a tall task. It's kind of sad to see what happened to him in Memphis after he was traded from the Bulls, but I digress. Let's move on to the next question. Bulls' most improved player. This one was interesting to me. Zach LaVine led the way with 391 votes, 71.4% of the vote. Ryan Arcidiacono with 110 votes. He got 20.1% of the vote. Lauri Markkanen, 39 votes at 7.1%. And we got a few write-ins. We got 5 write-ins for Robin Lopez and 2 for Shaq Harrison. What did you think about Zach LaVine leading the way on this?
I think it's similar to him winning the majority of votes for MVP this season. Like, to me, this is, again, it's a no-brainer. You would have liked to see a bigger lead from Lowry this season, and maybe the elbow injury just really got him off to a rocky start. He certainly seemed to lose some of that muscle that he had built onto his frame in the offseason because of that injury. You look at Markkanen's stats compared to his rookie year, his scoring went up from 15.2 to 18.7. That's a considerable little uptick. Rebounds went from 7.5 to 9 even. That's nice. 1.2 to 1.4 in assists per game. Steals and blocks pretty much the same. And efficiency on field goal percentage actually dipped a little bit compared to his rookie year. 3-point percentage nearly identical, 36.2 as a rookie, 36.1 this season. And overall field goal percentage dipped from 43.4 to 43. And then you look at what LaVine did, scoring from 16.7 to 23.7, increased his rebounds from 3.9 to 4.7, increased assists by 1.5 per game, 3 flat to 4.5. His efficient field goal percentage rose 8%, 44.2 last year, 52% this year. His three-point percentage got better, 34 to 37. Overall field goal percentage, 38.3 last year, 46.7 this year. Across the board, he even increased his free throw attempts per game from 4.5 to 6, increased his free throw percentage from 81.3 to 83.2. Everywhere you look in Zach's stats from last year to this year, the guy got better. So Markkanen's numbers did go up a little bit too, but not nearly as much as Zach's.
Yeah, and I think you look at the guy that came in second to Ryan Arcidiacono, you can make a pretty damn good case for him. Although he only played in 24 games last season, still the jump that he made from last year to this year, and you think about the progression too he was on. I mean, he was a two-way G League player not even 2 years ago, and then he joins the Bulls on a full contract this summer. Actually, partially guaranteed, and he earned his full contract back in January, but I just look at the advanced stats. Offensive box plus minus, he had nearly a jump of 3 points. Defensive box plus minus, he had a little bit of a dip there, but still, overall box plus minus, he was a positive 3.1 jump from last season to this season. So you look at some of those things. You look at true shooting percentage. Even last year, he was at 55%. He moved up to 58.8% this year, and that's 24 games to 81 to have a true shooting percentage over 81 games of 58.8% the way Archie Diacono did, I think is also good to see. You see his assist percentage, too, is up 3.4% from last year playing with the Bulls. I don't have a problem with people voting for Archie either. I mean, considering on a smaller scale than Zach LaVine, he had a pretty damn good season and was vital in a lot of those plays. I think, I think specifically about his defensive play with the fast break against the 76ers where he dove out of bounds, and he's just that 120% guy that's, he kept it up all season, and I was very surprised. So 20% of the vote, I think, is definitely fair for him. But going back to Zach LaVine, yes, I would agree wholeheartedly that he deserves definitely to be most improved player.
Yeah, and credit to Archie for the strides that he did make. And man, how great would it have been if the way he started shooting the three at the beginning of the season, you remember like October, early November, Archie was like drilling threes at a lights out clip, and then his shooting fell off really hard as the season progressed. But even still, the guy made strides this season compared to the player we saw for smaller glimpses last year. And, you know, if the Bulls don't have room to keep Archie on the roster based on everything else they do this offseason, I wouldn't be surprised to see him find a gig somewhere else as a, you know, ninth or tenth guy on a roster somewhere in the NBA, because people recognize what he does on the defensive end. He is a smart basketball player who, you know, it's not like he's going to make insane blink and you miss it passes as a distributing guard, but he's got some chops, and he certainly, I think, has enough on the offensive end as just a competent guy who's going to limit his mistakes and can be a difference maker on the defensive end, that if the Bulls do let him go, he might find himself a gig somewhere else.
I agree with that. I think there's going to be a lot of teams interested in him this summer. And you mentioned it, too, about the three-point percentage. It's crazy. Go back and look at his splits in October and November. His three-point percentage in October was 45.8%, and that was on 24 attempts in just 7 games. In November, he was 43.5% on 69 attempts from three. To shoot 43.5% from three in a month in 15 games the way he did in November, thinking about Zach LaVine and his struggles, he shot 25% from three. They needed somebody, and he was like the only guy knocking down threes outside of Justin Holiday. The month that killed him was January, though. Or no, I should say January and December. December, he shot 26.5% from three, and then in January, he shot 30.3% from three. So he made some adjustments at the end of the season. March was a really good month for him shooting three. He was back over 40% at 40.7%, but definitely in those first 2 months, you wished he could have kind of kept that up. But I mean, it's hard to keep up an average of 44% from three, especially for Archie, who's got to find ways to be creative at that 3-point line with his height and everything. So good for him, man. I agree with you. I think teams are going to be, there's going to be a lot of interest in him this offseason.
And to wrap up, most improved player, Good for those of you who wrote in Robin Lopez, who got a few votes, because we did see I believe, as my pal John coined the term, a Rolosance of sorts in the back end of this season when the Bulls were running out of options. And maybe some of it was just sort of, and I think Mark may have mentioned this when we chatted with him on Friday, it was just kind of the teams late in the season were not spending a whole lot of time scouting or preparing for Robin Lopez doing damage in the post. But the way that he found a variety of ways to score with his work in the post, and even occasionally shooting, from distance with confidence, he expanded his offensive game this season in ways that we had never really seen Rolo play, certainly at least not in a Bulls uniform. you know, going back to his younger years with either Portland or Phoenix, maybe you saw some of that offensive competency from Rolo, but not to that degree earlier in the season and not to that degree last year. So Rolo certainly deserving of at least a few votes in that regard.
Agreed. And you just look at his true shooting percentage. He shot 59.8% true shooting percentage this season. He hadn't been that high since he was 25. Back in 2013-2014 with Portland, he shot 60.5% true shooting percentage, and that was in 82 games. So for a guy that sat on the bench and wasn't even being used at the beginning of the season and then turned it around late, I think Boylan, too, specifically, was more of a savior than anything with the style that he wanted to play, and it matched perfectly with Robin Lopez. And I don't know if that's going to come back to bite the Bulls this offseason when Robin's looking for a new home and a new contract, too.
Absolutely. The price tag on Rolo right now, as he hits free agency, is a lot higher than it was in November, without a doubt.
Next question, rate your level of satisfaction with Jim Boylan. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, I ask people to rate themselves satisfaction with Jim Boylan. Your average rating was a 3, and out of the total numbers, he got a 3.8 rating out of 10, Matt. This was in, again, around 550 votes. Were you surprised at all about how low people were on Jim Boylan at 3.8 rating and their average rating being a 3 out of 10?
No, this was pretty, these results were pretty in line with what I was expecting, just based on what I've seen Bulls fans talk about Boylan since he took over and then through the remainder of the season. And even leading into the offseason and recent conversations that have sparked because of a rumor of a 3-year extension that's in the works. And should the Bulls conduct a coaching search or should they double down on Boylan? For every, you know, somewhere between 3 and 4% out of a 10 scale approval rating kind of coincides with the people that I think on Twitter are at least defending the opportunity to give Boylan like a fair shot. In a similar way that Bulls fans thought that Fred never got a fair shake and that it was weird to fire him when they did, when they were starting to get healthy. I think a lot of Bulls fans, not the majority, I think the majority of Bulls fans still are not in favor of keeping Boylan around and certainly not keeping him around long term. But enough I have heard and seen Bulls fans coming to Boylan's aid to say he did what he told us he was going to do with the whole crawl before he can walk, before he can run thing. And yeah, for a while, it was really ugly, unwatchable basketball. In that month of February, when Zach and Lowry were both healthy and balling out, Otto arrived. They opened things up a little bit, a multi-ball handler system, and the Bulls had one of the best offensive ratings in basketball for like a couple of weeks. We did see glimpses of Boylan being competent in a few areas, and between that and then finishing out the season with a lot more losses, but playing with a bunch of G League guys, there are some people in this fan base who think it's too soon to judge Jim Boylan. Wow, say that five times fast. So I thought that these results were pretty much in line with what I've seen as far as people who hate Boylan and want to see him gone, and those who are at least for now sticking up for what he did manage to accomplish this season, and also saying, hey, let's not judge this guy because he lost a bunch of games with a bunch of G League players out there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And just looking at some of the ratings that people gave, he didn't get a 10 or a 9 in this. Nobody voted for a 10 or a 9. The highest rating he got was
an 8.
Well,
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, right. The highest rating he got was an 8, and that was only 1. There was a handful of 7s. There was a decent amount of 6s. No 5s, really. There was a lot of 4s, a lot of 3s, and a lot of 1s. So I will put that out there. So it seems like there's some split. There's some split where people just say he is absolutely terrible, he's going to be bad for this team. And then there's also some people that are a little bit higher on Jim Boylan and think, you know what, give him a shot and let's see what he does with a full season next year. Matt, I got one question on this, though, for you. Just listening to some other Bulls podcasts and breaking it down and talking about Boylan specifically, do you think going into next season that he is the worst NBA coach on a team right now? Considering every job that's open, people that may fill those jobs, do you think Boylan going into next season will be the worst coach?
That's a good question, and I guess my answer is I hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is. I hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about coaches around the league too that even are like kind of on the hot seat and some of their records too. But I mean, with not really knowing what Boylan can do with a fully healthy roster outside of just 1 month, it's kind of hard for me to tell. But I think if you look around the league and some of the stature of the other coaches and where they came from, I mean, it's certainly possible to put him in the bottom three. And where he was this season, too, a lot of those coaches that were on the hot seat got fired or let go. So Jim Boylan was pretty much the lone survivor out of any of those coaches on hot seats.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you think about it contextually, the confidence that this Bulls front office and ownership group have in Jim Boylan, based on everything we've heard from them, including just as recently as Paxton's season-ending press conference and saying, we believe in Jim, Jim's our guy, a multi-year extension is in the offing, as they say, that when you think about some of the other coaches in this league who have this season, you know, are about to lose their jobs, have recently been fired, or going back to last season, like Dwayne Casey winning Coach of the Year and getting fired simultaneously, like, people get fired for a lot less. But for whatever reason, and I think a lot of it has to do with what you were right about since day one, Jordan, which is that Paxton and Boylan, like it or not, and I think most Bulls fans don't like it, are the old school mentality in a ever-growing modern NBA, that they see things the same way. They see the league and basketball the same way. They talk about guys and their character, not just their basketball skills, in a very similar way. And that is a prime leading reason for the amount of confidence they have in Jim and the likelihood that he sticks around. Now, there's a lot of coaching turnover in this league. And I think Bulls fans would say, you know, conduct a coaching search, see who else is out there. I mean, it's crazy how swiftly some other teams move with this kind of stuff and swiftly move, just as swiftly as the Bulls said, Jim's still our guy. I mean, the Sacramento Kings heard that there was going to be a breakup with Luke Walton and the Lakers, and then the very next day, they hired Luke Walton. Like, coaching searches and coaching hires move quickly in this league. You know, on par, certainly rivaling coaching searches in the NFL and how quickly that stuff happens when the NFL season ends. And I feel like most of the Bulls fan base, whether or not you can defend Boylan a little bit for what he had to work with, are sitting here saying, like, man, you guys are just sitting on the sidelines while other teams are going through these coaching searches and doing so pretty efficiently. So, like, to me, I think that's the most disappointing part about, regardless of what you thought of Boylan in his first half a season as a head coach for the first time in the NBA, I just kind of like the ways we thought that there was never really truly a search before they before hiring Fred. I was like, can we get a search?
Yeah, right?
Because look what the other teams in the league are doing.
For Boylan, too, in Boylan's defense a little bit, I did think he did a couple good things this season. Whether that was part where he started and how aggressive he came in. And, you know, listening to even his conversation with Mark Schanowski and talking about how he said he felt it. He knew something was going to happen in those first couple of weeks where guys were going to turn on him. He just didn't know how that was going to happen. Coming off a 56-point loss, that pretty much makes sense that's the point where guys were like, you know what, F this. Why should I listen to him? And then you see them go down a road that we didn't want to, very frustrating at the end of December and even into January with the 10-game losing streak. But then I think the most fascinating thing with him was the way he's gotten Levine to kind of buy into what he's doing now. And I know it's only the last month or so of the season, and it took that long to get him to that point, but I got to give Jim Boylan credit for that. And Jim Boylan has been the same guy since he was hired day one. I think I can respect that from a point of, you're not changing your opinion every single second or what your message is to this team. And he was very honest and open and to some of his fault too, unregretful of some of the things that went on the beginning part of his tenure with this Bulls team. But I think the biggest worry I have next year, Matt, with Boylan is some of the in-game tactics that he's going to have in the roster that's assembled here. Like, the roster that's assembled for this Bulls team doesn't seem like it fits what Jim Boylan wants to do, playing inside out. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And two, I even think about little things like when to know how to use your timeouts, think back to the Atlanta game, and shout out to Cody Westerlund. He brought this up to my memory. The timeout against Atlanta in the four overtime game where he had two timeouts left, and instead of taking that timeout, he let Zach LaVine just get the ball inbounded and thrown to the other side of the court. Or how about the Bucks game, too, where he used all of his timeouts with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So things like that worry me very, very much about this team next year. And that's places where I think Boylan can improve. But will he? And will he make some of those changes? And his spiritual coaching guide, I like to call it, in Doug Collins, will he be that guy to tell him, dude, you got to figure out your timeouts and you got to figure out how you're going to run your in-game style and consistently with the players that he's got?
Well, he did love using those timeouts with, you know, a minute left and the Bulls are down 20 or 30.
It's so stupid.
He crushes those timeouts, man. So much so to the point where he started to piss off other teams' coaches. Like, dude, what are we doing here?
But, man.
You know, that goes to kind of what you were saying with, like, it's part of who Boylan is, not just as a coach, but as a person, and the way that he approaches it for a young team and calling them, you know, teaching moments and preparing the child for the road and all that kind of stuff. So, in that sense, it's not surprising to see the way that Jim mismanaged his timeouts and the way that he thought of them as these are the correct moments to use timeouts because this is how I'm trying to get these young players to buy into what I'm doing. At the, you know, when in reality, as you said, and Cody Westerlund pointed this out, when it came to actual, when the Bulls were in a game, in a close game, late in a game, and using your timeouts efficiently and effectively is very important. He kind of face planted a number of times in that regard. So that is absolutely a concern that fans can have with Jim moving forward.
So the last question we're going to answer on today's episode, and then we're going to do the second part of this survey sometime at the end, the back end of this week. So very interesting responses, though. And again, appreciate everybody who filled this survey out and took the time to go through it, because your feedback is just as important as Matt and I's feedback here on what the Bulls season is. And it gives us a little bit better of an understanding of where Bulls fans are at, because like I've said before, I don't really like to speak for the entire fan base, but getting an understanding of where people are at in terms of these questions and what happened throughout the season. And there was a shitload of stuff that happened this season that sometimes you and I even forget some of all of the things, the little things that happened throughout this season is crazy. So we'll go through the rest of the five questions on an episode later this week. So look out for that. The last question that I have for today's episode, Matt, was rate your level of satisfaction with the Bulls front office. Similar to this Jim Boylan question, rate them 1 through 10. I was actually a little bit more surprised that people were higher on this. So the average rating that the Bulls front office got was a 4.3. And the average score in terms of where you went 1 through 10 was a 4. So that was out of 550-odd votes. So were you surprised at all that it was a little bit higher at a 4.3 than maybe the rest of the season went? And was there a tipping point for you, Matt, that you felt like Bulls fans maybe gave the front office a little bit more credit, i.e. the Otto Porter trade? And where fans feel like they're going into this offseason.
Yeah, I was at first a little taken aback by this. I mean, they had a higher rating of satisfaction among the fan base than Jim Boylan. And it's not like Boylan was, you know, making a bunch of new BFFs among Bulls fans for the most part when he came in this season. But, I mean, it was enlightening to see those results because it was kind of a reminder that unhappy people tend to be a lot louder than happy people. And sports fans and sports fans interacting with one another on social media is one example of that overarching truth. When people have something to complain about, they are louder than when they are content. So even like, it's still not a positive rating. It's still, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's still a negative rating, but it's not as negative as I anticipated because of all of the hashtag FireGar Packs talk that you and I hear and see on social media on a daily basis, and people, you know, texting and calling in, and the overall trend of no one in this city and no one among this fan base really trusts these people who run this team. But as you said, maybe part of it is what I was saying with just the, you know, the discontent are louder than the content. Maybe some of it is some of the recent moves that they've made. The auto trade, certainly, maybe there were those who doubted it at the time, but I'm sorry, if you still think that trading away Jabari and Bobby and getting Otto for that was a mistake, and you'd rather have Jabari and Bobby coming into contract negotiations or the Bulls opting to either let Jabari walk or paying him $20 million again next year, I'm sorry, I think you're nuts. Between that and I think most people being high on Lauri Markkanen, and maybe a little lesser, but still fairly high on Wendell hitting on their first, or on their previous two lottery picks, there is a little bit of credit being given to these people compared to, say, 2 or 3 years
ago. Yeah, there's a handful of people who voted 10 for the front office. So I don't know if they're trolling or if they seriously think that the front office is operating at a 10 out of 10. Look, I think those are trolls, but the overarching amount of votes.
One of them might be Fred.
The overarching amount of votes were between 4 and 6. So people were either. I mean, this kind of makes sense though. Now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more, is like if you sit at a 5 out of 10, you're not completely happy with everything that happened, but you're also not completely pissed off about everything that has gone on too. So that makes sense. And this was specifically about this season and maybe even expanding it a little bit to the rebuild in general. I get that this season was very difficult and it was very frustrating to listen to some of the things that the front office had to say. But for the most part, I felt like some of the moves that they did make, you know, pushing Jabari Parker signing to the side for a second. Think about it. Picking up Shaq Harrison, getting Ryan Arcidiacono on two cheap deals, that those guys were pickups, trading for 2 second-round picks and Wayne Selden, getting a good look at him for 3 months. And then you get the Otto Porter Jr. trade thrown in there, too. And the cash considerations deals on the surface were seemed as, how the F are you guys doing this in the middle of a rebuild when you were one of the worst teams? But still, those moves were savvy for a team that literally didn't have to give anything up. And they were getting cash back for that. But again, the history of the cash still plays a factor to that. But I was surprised. I was actually surprised that there was a lot of votes between 4 and 6. There was a handful of votes at 8, the handful of votes at 10, and also a handful of votes at 1, too. So I think there's a sliding scale with this Bulls fan base and where they sit with the front office and how they feel. And look, all of that can change too with the lottery that comes up and some of the moves that they make in the offseason.
Yeah, and like I think maybe another element to the score being a little bit higher than maybe you or I expected is that this was a poll about this season. Obviously, I think more fans than not would like to see a change at the helm when it comes to this team. They would like to not only see Gar Forman gone, and I think certainly more people want, if they had their choice, would happily just take Gar being gone than both Gar and Paxson being gone. I think some people, or at least more people, believe in Paxson's abilities. And I think knowing some of their missteps from recent years, overarchingly, to me, there are still more people who distrust these two men in the front office than trust them. But maybe just because that this was a poll about what happened this season, drafting Wendell and making the auto trade, getting Wayne Selden in that trade in addition to a couple of picks when they got rid of Holiday, maybe that was enough, and the growth we saw from Zach LaVine and at least the month of February we saw from Lauri Markkanen was all enough for some people to have at least a semblance of feel-good vibes around maybe some of the moves that these guys have made recently actually do deserve a little bit of credit.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the freak out about the Otto Porter trade, too, and the frustration there, I think they were a little bit vindicated on that, considering the season that he had after he joined the Bulls and the impact that he had there, too. So, you know, the initial freak out about that, and I was a little bit frustrated, too, by that trade. I said I didn't hate it. I just said I felt like the Bulls could have gotten squeezed a little bit more out of the Wizards at that time. But in the end, you think about it. Jabari wasn't coming back. Bobby would have costed you a ton of money to retain this summer. considering the way he was playing with the Bulls coming off of his injury. He didn't do that necessarily with the Wizards, but still, to upgrade at a position of need that they found out, and actually, although I think it was late in realizing that you weren't going to obtain any of those top free agents this summer, whether it was tier one or tier two even, to join this team, they made that realization right before the deadline had passed, and I thought that was still late. I think you should have had that realization back in the summer. But nonetheless, they made that realization that they weren't going to be in play for any of those guys, so they went with the better option, and they went for a trade, and Otto Porter popped up. And even if you go back, there was a handful of teams that were interested in Otto Porter. The Denver Nuggets, the Portland Trailblazers, there was a lot of other teams that were in play to try to obtain Otto Porter at the deadline, and so the Bulls were lucky enough to get him. And there's been a lot of people saying that was one of the most underrated moves of the season, is picking him up. So we'll see what he does next year, but I think this offseason is going to definitely sway people's opinion on this front office and where they go. And look, they can't control a lot of those injuries that happened this year too. But I'm not absolving them of everything. The things that they said, that John Paxson said when they hired Jim Boylan, and the reasons why Fred Hoiberg was gone, I think people get a little frustrated with that. And also too, his kind of meltdown on radio with 670 yeah. The Score was also kind of eye-opening as well. So we'll see what they do this summer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that even those who maybe voted more kindly towards the front office in our poll would agree that this is an immensely important offseason. Especially knowing that this is a shallow draft class, knowing that if you don't get lucky and get pick one or pick two, figuring out what to do on draft night is a big test, and there aren't any easy answers outside of picks one and pick two. And then how to spend your $20 million or so in free agent cap space to address the needs of this team. And some fans thinking that they should swing for the fences on a guy who can come in and be a real game changer, whether that's trade, like a sign-and-trade kind of situation, or taking on a big contract, or offering a big contract for one player, or more evenly spreading out that money that they have available. Fans have different ideas as far as what they would like to see the front office do in that regard, but what's true across the board is that everybody is going to be looking at the moves that this front office makes with a very close eye, because after a disappointing year two of a rebuild where, you know, at least by wins and losses, you took a step back from year one of the rebuild. Not that the pressure is on from ownership, but from the fan base, everybody wants to see them nail all of these decisions this offseason to actually make what John Paxson was saying in his season-ending press conference viable, which is that they want to be in the hunt next year. And, you know, in the hunt for what? Seventh or eighth seed, maybe? Even still, that would require a considerable leap. And to do that, they need to make a lot of correct moves this offseason.
Yeah, and I think the injuries too, I don't think that they can play that anymore. That's played out, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, them always kind of using the barring health, and then they follow it up with what they think is going to expect this season. To me, that excuse, I think, is worn thin, considering all the injuries that the Bulls had at the beginning, the first year of the rebuild, and then all the injuries that they've had this season. That's 2 years of injuries where they've used that as a majority of their excuse of why this team didn't perform up to their expectations, or just excuses of, you know, we didn't get to see their guys that often. We didn't get to see Zach LaVine, Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen play together in the first season, and then we didn't get to see Carter, LaVine, Markkanen, Porter, and Dunn all play together for more than, I don't know, a handful of games this season. So I think people want the Bulls front office, and maybe I want the Bulls front office, to move away from barring health. I get that that's part of it, and I think fans now realize that that's just a given. So they can't lean on health being one of the major priorities of this season. Because, look, you got to find plan B, plan C, and plan D, and you've got to plan for that this summer. And saying that you had depth clearly wasn't right last year. They said that they had depth at every position, And that clearly showed to be exposed with the amount of injuries that they had. And they didn't have guys that could step up and fill those roles consistently day in and day out, game in, game out. And I think that they need to address a lot of that. And I want to see them make savvy moves like they did the last 2 years. Picking up David Nwaba for basically nothing, Shaq Harrison for basically nothing, and getting productive minutes from those guys. What can they do this summer to do that and bring those guys in, especially with not that much cap space to work with? So, that's going to be really important. And also, too, what they do with Dunn. I think that's going to be a really important decision. If they can get something for him, I'm all in, man. Like, if they can get something for Dunn and it's productive, I'm all in there. So, a lot of question marks for the Bulls front office this season.
Yeah. When you said depth at every position, I just had one mental image, and that was a smiling Cristiano Felicio.
Me too. But then, you know, you go back to the Bulls media day in September, and that was the thing. They followed it up with health is going to be the most important. We feel like we've got depth at every position now.
Now, you're not going to hear Gar and I talk about wins or anything like that, but the expectations for us are to see this team come together. What's exciting is that we're healthy. At least we start the year tomorrow healthy. We feel we're deep. We've got at least two deep at every position, so we expect training camp to be ultra competitive, where guys will earn the minutes that they get on the floor, and that is very important for us.
That clearly showed to be not the case at all here. So let's hope they're deep two or three at every position coming out of this offseason, going into training camp in September, right?
Yes, please. And actually deep, not just fake deep.
Right. Not like, oh, we got our five starters, that's good, and whatever else we got on the bench is just surplus. Because it could be a disastrous season like it was this year if injuries start to sprout up again. But knock on wood, that doesn't happen. Good vibes only. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text and your voicemails. If you didn't complete the survey, but you're interested enough to hear some of the reaction from other Bulls fans, we'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Drop us your voicemails and your text messages. We'll get to all of those on Wednesday's episode. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com